Hi, this is Bernie Wides, the Naturalist, back on the air for the Heritage Radio Network. The program is The Naturalist, as I said, and we're broadcasting from Roberta's Restaurant in rainy Bushwick, Brooklyn. We finally got some rain, long-needed rain. Keep everything green. And our sponsor today is Whole Foods Markets, and I know that I've shopped at the Whole Foods Markets, and it's a very good place to shop with a huge, huge variety. And only the best of foods. So today, my guest is back again. My partner, Carol Butler, is here.
Thank you for having me.
And Carol and I will do this show together, and then we'll probably do another one together, and which will be broadcast next week. So today, I just want to remind you about this new exhibit at the Museum of Natural History, our favorite museum, where Carol and I both volunteer. And it's called A Race to the Ends of the Earth, and it's about Antarctica. And it's about a race between a Norwegian explorer and a British explorer to reach the South Pole. So I'm going to talk about just one phase about Antarctica, because it's a huge topic, and I'll do a couple of shows on it now and then. But today I want to talk about the penguins. Because penguins are, everybody loves penguins, and when if you go to Antarctica, everybody wants to see penguins, and they're easily observed. So there are about 17 to 18 species of penguins on the Earth, and all of them are residents of the southern part of the Earth.
That's interesting.
There are no penguins north of the equator. Okay?
I didn't realize that.
So you may wonder why aren't there any penguins north of the equator? And the reason being is that penguins can't stand hot weather. So to get to the northern hemisphere from the southern, they would have to pass the hottest part of the Earth, which is on both sides of the equator. The only small exception to this is on the Galapagos Islands, mm-hmm. which I think are 5 degrees south of the equator. And there are one kind of penguin in the Galapagos Islands. And the reason that they're there is because there's a very cold current of water that comes up from Antarctica, up the west coast of South America. It's called the Humboldt Current. And it brings very cold water to that area of the Pacific. So you can think of it as a river of cold water going through the rest of the Pacific, which is pretty warm water. That's why the penguins are there. They probably rode that current up originally and ended up in the Galapagos. And they need cold water because the critters that they eat are mostly cold water critters. And also because through evolution, they have evolved a very, very, very good protection against cold weather. And that also would hamper them in hot weather. They would overheat very easily. So remember, it's a good quiz question if you want to show your friends how much you're learning on Heritage Radio Network. You can say, do you know where most penguins are located? And you can tell them that in the southern half of the Earth, the southern hemisphere. And most of them are further south than that. There would be in the temperate zone of the southern hemisphere, southern Africa, Chile, Argentina, Peru, along those areas. And all the islands between the Falkland Islands, which are off Argentina, and all the way down to Antarctica.
You could have a trivia question. What type of penguins are in the North Pole?
That's good.
That would be a good trivia question.
It's like the other one that we ask the people is, what's the only continent that doesn't have any butterflies?
Right.
Go ahead, Carol.
Well, no, I was going to say that in all the animals that I've studied and written about, they almost always say they're found on every continent except Antarctica.
Right.
Right. And butterflies included. Yeah. So it's amazing that there's anything there.
Yes. But all of the wildlife of Antarctica are located on the periphery along the coastline where there are some exposed rocks and stuff. And there's the Antarctic Peninsula, which juts up towards South America. And that's where most of the wildlife is. And the center of Antarctica, where it's like a polar desert, there's nothing. Maybe some bacteria, because bacteria are all over the Earth, and we're constantly finding them in other places. So the penguins are, when the early explorers came to the islands around Antarctica, like South Georgia Island, Elephant Island, the Falkland Islands, and the Shetlands, There are a lot of islands. A lot of them have British names because the British explorers were there. They saw the penguins, and they didn't know first if they were fish or they were birds, because penguins are flightless birds. They can't fly, but they do fly through the water. They are fantastic in the water, and if you've ever seen them in a zoo, they are fantastic swimmers. So the first explorers really didn't know. They called them fish birds or something like that because they really didn't know that much about them. So I'm going to go over an outline that I have on penguins briefly, and then we'll go into some details about the penguins that you can see at the exhibit on Antarctica at the Museum of Natural History. So this is an overall thing for all penguins. So I got this from the Wildlife Conservation Society. Those are the people that run the zoos. So if you go to Bronx Zoo, it's the Wildlife Conservation Society, the Prospect Park Zoo, and the Central Park Zoo. And for you folks that live outside of the metropolitan area, if you have a big metro zoo somewhere, or even a small one, it may be run by the Wildlife Conservation Society. So penguins are birds. This is an outline, basically, that they give out at these places. They're perfectly adapted to life in the water. They lay eggs, have feathers, beaks, and are warm-blooded. So penguins do not fly like other birds. They use their wings for flying through the water. So if you see penguins, and a great place to see this is in the Central Park Zoo. They have a small penguin exhibit, but when you are looking at the penguins, you are your head is at the water level. And you can see the penguins swimming underwater. It's really a beautiful sight to see. They really are graceful and beautiful. Now, how are they different than other birds? Well, most birds fly. There are some other flightless birds. I think there's one in Australia. Mm-hmm. The kiwi is also another one. But there was another big one in Australia, and I forgot the name of it. But there are some other flightless birds, and some of them are extinct by now. But penguins have a different evolutionary track. Because
they don't have feathers, do they?
They do have feathers.
Do they have feathers?
Their feathers are very small. They don't look like feathers.
Oh, okay.
But I examined some penguin feathers when I was in Antarctica. And I'll read the description they have here of feathers. Okay. And also their bones. Their bones are heavy and solid to increase their body weight, making it easy to dive. Penguins have bones in their flippers to keep them stiff. Flying birds, in contrast, have hollow bones for easier lift.
Hummingbirds have hollow bones.
Yes, all flying birds have hollow bones. I remember when I was working in Florida, and we had some bones of a pelican. Mm. And a pelican's a big bird, but you pick up their bone, it's feather light. Mm-hmm. That's to lessen their weight,
right,
and makes it easier for them to fly. But the penguin bones are solid, just like the bones of the manatee, which is this big mammal. They have heavy bones. And then in other mammals, the bones are where I think the red blood cells are made,
mm-hmm,
in the bones.
Right.
But in the manatees, it's not made there. It's just solid bone. So they make it somewhere else in the body. Okay, because we've all seen penguins in pictures and movies and all that. And you see they stand up erect. They look like little people. And they waddle around. They look like little old men in tuxedos. They're really cute and they're really funny. But it's the... They have to do that because of the way their bones are attached to their skeletons. Penguins must stand upright like people. They have small bones in their feet that end in three claws in each webbed flipper. So their feet are webbed, so they can use it when they swim. They use it for steering mostly because they use their wings, which are like flippers of a porpoise,
mm-hmm,
or a whale, to swim with. And they have bones in their flippers, like maybe like ducks. That's the closest bird that I could compare them to. Okay, so the question is, do penguins get cold feet? Now, here they are. They spend half their lives standing on ice.
Right.
And the weather in Antarctica, you know from hearing about it, is bitterly cold. And the islands that most of the penguins are on are also bitterly cold. So how can they stand there without getting, without wearing warm socks?
An excellent question.
It's a good question, right? So standing on ice for long periods of time is no problem for penguins who live in the Antarctic. Their tough, thick skin is not sensitive to the cold. Delicate muscles that operate the feet are located inside the insulated body.
Mm-hmm.
So there, in addition, a specialized network of blood vessels in the legs function as a heat exchanger. The blood flowing out to the feet is cooled by the blood flowing in from the feet, which in turn is warmed. Therefore, the feet can be kept at a temperature close to that of the environment without any significant heat loss from the body.
Interesting.
So the whole plan is not to lose any body heat. So a heat exchanger is one pipe inside the other a lot of times. And if you want to cool the water in it, like in an air conditioning unit, the warmer water is surrounded by a water jacket of colder water, and the heat gets absorbed by the cold water and therefore cooling it down. But the penguins, it works the reverse. The cold blood from the feet goes through, not a pipe this time, but an artery or vein, and surrounding it is another one. And that warms the blood up again after it's been out on the penguin feet. Okay, so now, do all penguins live on ice and snow? Well, let's find out. Penguins are found only in the southern half of the world, which I said before, south of the equator. Out of 18 species of penguins, only two, the Adelie and the Emperor, live year-round in the ice and snow of the Antarctic. Most live in temperate climates. Like I said, southern Africa, southern South America. The penguins here at the New York Aquarium are called black-footed penguins, and they're from the coast of Africa. Mm. So if you go to Central Park, you'll see black-footed penguins. Okay, so and not all penguins look alike, even though their coloration is almost exactly. It says, although most penguins appear to look alike, there are variations in size, color, and marking. The black-footed penguin stands 18 inches tall. That's the one that you find in Central Park, where the emperor penguin from the Antarctic stands 3 to 4 feet tall and can weigh up to 90 pounds.
Ooh, that's very big.
So they're really big for a bird, A, and for a land bird that just walks around. Okay? The fairy penguin, which is the smallest one from Australia and New Zealand, it's the smallest of all penguins, and it measures 16 inches and weighs only 2 pounds. So there's a big variety in the sizes of the penguins. Okay, this species is also known as the little blue penguin due to its bluish color. Now, when I was in Australia, I went to see these fairy penguins because they have a terrific setup. There's an island off the coast of southern Australia. Now, remember, Australia's pretty far south to start off with. So the waters off Australia are really cold because the currents come from Antarctica. There's an island called Phillips Island. And if you want to copy this down for your next trip to Australia, you should, because it's a great sight to see. And if you go to the city of Melbourne, you can get a bus that will take you down to Phillips Island, and you can see these fairy penguins. So what they have constructed, it's a sandy beach with sand dunes, and they've constructed bleachers facing the ocean.
Huh.
And you can't walk around there. You have to sit in the bleachers, okay? Because these fairy penguins, their nests are burrows in the sand. So they tell you what time to come, because you have to come only towards sunset, before it gets dark. Because where are these penguins? They're out in the ocean fishing. That's how penguins spend most of their lives, fishing in the ocean. And when I say fishing, I mean diving or surface feeding. They dive down under the water and they grab fish and krill. And I'll talk about krill a little bit later. Krill is like a shrimp. So you're sitting in the bleachers, and you're waiting for something to happen. And then everybody keeps looking at the beach. And then all of a sudden, you'll see one penguin swimming towards the beach and jumping out of the water onto the sand. And then you'll look, and you'll see another one. Mm. And then you'll see another one. And then you'll see hundreds and thousands coming out of the surf. They were like surfing. And they're coming out of the surf, and they're marching up to the beach. And then tiny, what did I say? They were 16 inches high, 18 inches.
Yeah.
And they head for their dens on the beach. Now, the question is, how do they know where their dens are? Because in their dens are babies. They went out fishing for their babies to bring it back to the dens. Well, they can tell by the cry of the baby.
Right.
Each baby has a distinct cry. And the penguins, and probably maybe by smell also. I'm not quite sure about that. So why do they have us up on bleachers? Because some of the penguins go under the bleachers to go to their dens or their holes in the ground that are behind the bleachers. So the whole show takes about an hour, but it's really fascinating. You really get a good look at these tiny little birds that are spending their whole lives in the oceans. So those are the fairy penguins of Australia. So let's talk some more about how well the penguins are adapted for their life in the cold seas. Okay, so the shape of their body, and as I said, if you go to the Central Park Zoo, where you're looking at eye level at the penguins in the water, you see that their body is shaped like a torpedo. A torpedo is what submarines use to shoot at other ships. It's a streamlined shape. And also whales are this shape. Mm. It's almost like a cylinder with a pointy end that where the head is and a pointy at the other end where the tail is. So shaped like torpedoes, their streamlined bodies help them to move easily through the water. And water is 800 times more dense than air. So they have to really work to get through it. I mean, you know, if you've gone swimming, it's not so easy. It takes a lot of energy and work to swim through the water. And our bodies aren't really shaped or formed like the penguins' bodies. So they can swim for hours and hours and hours. And when they're tired swimming, they can come up on the surface of the sea and sit like ducks on the water. So they're really water birds. Okay, so their flippers and their feet. Narrow, flattened, paddle-like flippers enable the penguins to swim with a burst of speed up to 30 miles an hour. Webbed feet, used for steering, are attached far back in the body. That's why they have to waddle when they walk, because the legs are further back. Imagine if your legs were further back, you'd have a hard time walking. You'd fall over on your face, probably. But the penguins, they waddle along. And everybody has seen pictures. If you remember that movie, The March of the Penguins, I think it was, about the emperor penguins.
Yes, that's right.
Yes, I'm going to talk about emperor penguins next. They march 60 miles waddling along. Okay, not only that's why they waddle, yeah. Now, the feathers. Of course, Carol asked me about their feathers, whether they do have feathers or not. Penguins have small, tightly packed, overlapping feathers. Mm-hmm. For example, the black-footed penguin has 70 feathers per square inch. Located at the base of the tail is a well-developed oil gland. Using its beak, the penguin coats its feathers with oil, making themselves waterproof. The waterproof feathers form a layer of insulation that traps warm air between the skin and the feathers. The feathers must be oiled or preened often. So they oil their feathers like ducks do. They do the same thing. If you watch ducks, they're always turning their heads to the side, and they have oil glands on the sides of their face to oil their feathers. Also, at the base of the feathers, there's a big ball of fluffy down that grows on the feathers. So they have this terrific insulation from their feathers, which capture air. That's how the feathers work. If you have a feather down comforter at home, or you have a down vest or a down jacket, they tell you how many feathers are in it, because the more feathers and the more fluff the feathers have, the warmer you'll be.
Right.
So you know how light down jackets are. You know, they're feather light. And they're efficient because they trap air. That's the whole secret of insulation. But not only that, under their skin, they have a layer of blubber like whales and other sea creatures that keeps them warm. Okay, so these feathers have to be renewed periodically, and it's called molting, M-O-L-T-I-N-G. So penguins molt or shed their old feathers during a two-week process. At this time, they're not waterproof and cannot go into the water to feed. Their underlying fat or blubber nourishes them. So at one time of the year, they come up out of the water, and it's usually right after the mating season. They shed their old feathers, and they grow new ones back. At that time, they look like little balls of fluff. That little penguin I gave you this morning looks like a ball of fluff.
Yeah.
Of course, he's a baby.
Right.
And the babies, when they're born, they have these down feathers, and they have to grow their waterproof feathers. So even adult penguins have to renew their feathers once a year. And at that time, they have to live on their stored fat from their blubber, because they can't go in the water because they're not waterproof. They would get all wet and shiver and probably die of the cold.
Right.
So that's why they molt. And all penguins have a black and white feather pattern coloring, and it's called countershading. This black and white pattern is characteristic of all penguins. It helps to camouflage them from predators swimming in the ocean. When viewed from above, the penguin's dark black blends with the ocean bottom.
Okay.
If they're swimming along and there's a predator in the air looking down at them, like a skua or
almost invisible.
They look almost invisible. Yeah. And while viewed from below, the white belly blends in with the sky.
Very clever.
The light from the sky. So a lot of birds have that, but penguins, that's how they survive because of this. It's called countershading, because one side is shaded and, you know, the dark color, and one side is light. Okay, I'm going to just tell you one or two more things, and then we'll stop for a break in a minute. Okay, how do they move, penguins? Well, you've all seen pictures of them waddling along. They're terrific in the water. They can really fly on the water. But they also can toboggan. And if you saw that movie, I think, March of the Penguins, mm-hmm. you saw them tobogganing. Right. It's like sledding down a hill without a sled. They jump forward on their bellies and stretch their fins out, and there they go down the hill. So they can travel pretty fast that way, tobogganing. And there's one penguin called the rockhopper penguin, which looks like it has a bad hair day. It has hair sticking up on the top of its head in all directions. It's a small penguin. They can hop from rock to rock. When I was on that trip to Antarctica, we visited a rookery, and we were up on a high cliff, and you could see the rockhopper penguins jumping out of the ocean onto a rock and then going from rock to rock to rock to rock and climbing up the cliff. So they're really cute, these little rockhoppers. Okay, also, they can do porpoising. And you all know porpoises and dolphins are pretty closely related. They're cousins, but they all swim the same way. Porpoising means that they're swimming in the water, all of a sudden they'll come out and take their whole body almost out of the water and then go back down again. Porpoising is a very efficient way to swim, and that's when they come up to breathe, because since they're birds and they're not fish, they have to breathe oxygen from the air. So they do this porpoising, and they can move along very fast that way. Okay, so I'm going to talk about how they take care of their young, because where penguins live, it's a very difficult place to bring up your young because of the cold conditions and all that. It's like
it's just a funny thing to say.
It's like in some neighborhoods,
right,
which are not conducive for bringing up
That's
children.
Right. You don't have good heat.
Right, heat or whatever, or a lot of danger around.
Right.
Right. Yeah. So, how about when you were a kid? Did you live in a nice neighborhood?
I did. It was okay. I lived in the Bronx, but in a nice area.
So your parents didn't have to worry too much.
No.
But they worried anyhow.
I'm sure they did.
All parents worry. Penguin parents are the same way. So. At home, parental care. Penguins are social birds and live in large colonies called rookeries. Mm. There may be as many as a million birds, all chattering, fighting, and nesting over hundreds of acres. The noise and smell were once used as a navigational aid by early sailors.
Interesting.
If the ocean was foggy and they didn't know if they were near land, if they were in South America and Southern Africa, they would get the smell from the penguin colony, and they knew they were near land. Where they could hear the penguins, right. You know, a million penguins making noise to attract their mates or the young. It's really noisy. You wouldn't want to live in that neighborhood if you're not a penguin. Absolutely. Okay, so, and they return to the same rookery every year, and they make nest sites for courtship, mating, egg laying, and chick rearing. So here they are on land for only about 2 months. That's it. The rest of the time they're at sea. And the exception is the Adélie penguins, which I'll talk about, and the emperor penguins, which live on Antarctica. And they're there most of the time. The emperor penguins are there almost in the wintertime, which is very strange. And we'll get to the emperors in a minute. So the parents work together to build a nest. The nest that I saw in Antarctica consisted of two or three stones, and that was it. Mm-hmm. Because Antarctica has very little foliage. Right. There's no sticks and twigs to pick up and make a nest. Sometimes there are bones of dead penguins. They'll use those for the nest too. But it's important that they have at least a couple of stones on the ice, and I'll tell you why in a minute. Okay, it says, depending upon the species and location, nest materials may include feathers, stones, twigs, grasses, mosses, and seaweed. The black-footed penguins, which are a temperate penguin, they live on, as I said, Southern Africa. They build nests. They make underground burrows, and I think they do that because the climate's a little too warm for them. Mm-hmm. So if they burrow underground, it's much cooler.
Yeah.
Well, the emperor penguins from Antarctica do not build nests at all. This may be due to the lack of building materials on this barren land, just as I said. Instead, they carry the eggs on the top of their feet for 6 weeks, and I'll talk about that
a
little
tricky.
Later. Yes, that's pretty tricky. A flap of belly skin covers the egg or chick for protection and warmth. Mm. In most cases, parents take turn incubating the eggs or caring for the chicks. While one parent is protecting its young, the other is out to sea feeding.
Okay, so they don't walk around with the chicks on their legs. They sit. Okay. I'm picturing them walking around balancing them.
They don't sit. They stand.
They stand.
I don't think they can sit. Well, when they're standing, they're really sitting.
They must squat or something because the belly skin covers the feet. So.
Yeah. But it's... the flap, I'll talk about the flap in a minute. Okay, but that's a good question. Okay, so while one parent is protecting the young, the other is out to sea feeding. Upon its return, the adults change places. And they're talking about the male emperor penguins. But I'll save that for the second half of the show because you can hear the beautiful Debussy music coming on. And I'm going to stop for a minute and remember that this is the Heritage Radio Network. And this is Bernie Wise, a naturalist, with my partner, Carol Butler. And we're going to talk some more about penguins and how they were slaughtered in the early days and now that they're protected. Okay, and the sponsor today is Whole Foods Market, a terrific place to shop. Hi, this is Bernie Wise, the naturalist, back on the air for part two for the show today. And remember, we're coming from beautiful downtown Bushwick, Roberta's Restaurant, which is a terrific restaurant. And my co-host is Carol Butler. You hear her asking these great questions, which is good because it makes me think some more. And we're going to carry on now and talk mostly about emperor penguins. Now, if you saw that film, it was out about, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago. It was beautifully made film, and it showed the emperor penguins. Now, what's different about them? They are true Antarctic penguins. And if you come to see our new show at the Museum of Natural History on the race to the ends of the earth, we have a terrific little exhibit on the emperor penguins. So many years ago, the early explorers ate penguins because, you know, they were looking for fresh food. And they ate penguin meat because it was good. It was like, of course, eating like what?
Chicken.
Like chicken, of course. You know, you eat strange animals, and everybody said frogs, they taste like chicken.
Right.
But penguins, you know, they're birds. So they really taste like chicken. And the explorers certainly ate penguins and seals and anything else they could catch. But the penguin also has, I said it has blubber, a layer of blubber about an inch to inch and a half thick under its skin. And they started to harvest the penguins, including the emperors, for oil, just like they did seals and whales.
Yeah.
So over the course of years in the 1800s, they probably killed millions of penguins. And what they would do is, since penguins have no fear of man, they are not afraid of us. If you look at the pictures that I put on today on the site, you know, for the show, you'll see a picture of me sitting on the ice in Antarctica with a penguin right next to me and other penguins in the background. And I wanted to get a picture of a penguin sitting on my lap because there was one sitting on my lap. But what they're attracted to are shiny things. And I was wearing that red jacket, as you can see in the picture, and it has toggles on it. And they tried to eat the toggles because, you know, they're birds. They're looking for things to eat all the time. So they're not afraid of man. So the early explorers called them stupid birds because they never tried to get away. So what they would do is they would go at the season when they were just coming out before mating season, because other times they're in the water, and they would build a fence, like a corral. Like if you wanted to corral cattle, the fence was open to the sea, and then it got narrower and narrower and narrower. So they corralled the birds into a big pen. And what did they do to kill them? They would club them to death. Mm. They would do this in the morning and club them, and then the hunters or the sailors, they would have their breakfast, and then after breakfast they would go back and they would put them in the digester, as they called it, which were huge cauldrons where they put the whole body in and they boiled it.
Wow.
Okay? And when they boiled it, the oil that was in the flesh, in the blubber, would separate out and float to the top.
Right, sure.
And then they would skim it off. And it was very high, it was very valuable oil. They used it for light, for oil lamps, just like they did the seals and the whale blubber.
Now, the emperor penguins are the ones that are 3 and 4 feet tall.
Yes.
I'm just picturing this because it's like a person.
That's right.
Yeah.
So they were one of the ones that all the penguins that were on these islands were slaughtered for it. Until the public found out what was going on, and they got a lot of bad publicity, and eventually they stopped it because there wasn't that much oil in the penguins to start off with. You could get about a pint of oil from a penguin, from a small penguin. So they stopped slaughtering them, and eventually they all became protected. So let's just go back to the emperor penguins because they're really different. Now, they're the biggest penguin. They're 3 to 4 feet tall. They weigh up to 100 pounds. And you can imagine that they have a large egg. So if you wanted to make an omelet, one penguin egg would be enough for a good, healthy omelet.
Right.
So why am I talking about that? Because in the exhibit that you hopefully you'll come to see at the museum, these explorers, before they headed for to try to get to the South Pole, the English expedition had a scientist with it. And one of the scientists, his name was Wilson, he had a theory that birds were related to dinosaurs.
Mm-hmm.
Or to reptiles, he thought.
Right.
Yeah. So nobody really knew. So he said if he could get a hold of a penguin egg while it's still in the embryo form, they could do research and try to see whether that was true, that birds were related to reptiles. So it was winter time when the explorers were there. They were waiting for spring to start or summer to start. But three of the crew from the English expedition set out in the middle of the winter to go to the emperor penguin colony. Now, the emperor penguins, you remember the movie, I don't know if it was called March from the Sea or Penguin Parade. I don't remember what
March
it was called.
March of the Penguins,
I think. Remember, it wasn't a cartoon. It was a real documentary. Well, anyhow, what the emperor penguins do is they live in the sea like the other penguins, but when they spend a lot of their time on Antarctica, they come out of the water and they march 60 miles inland. Now picture these penguins waddling along, maybe tobogganing. They're big birds, and they march to their rookery grounds, which is 60 miles in from the sea. The males and females get together, they mate, and they're pretty monogamous. So they try to find their mate that they had last year. And how do they find each other? Well, they don't put an ad in the paper or anything. they don't go online. They by the call. It's amazing that they can recognize each other by their call. And when they do recognize each other, they bow to each other and say, "Hi, here I am. Remember me from last year? And let's make a baby chick." Or if they can't find their mate from the previous year, what they do is they'll mate with any available female because they don't have a lot of time. They have to do this. Time is of the essence with all the penguins. Because there's a short period for the other penguins when it's warm enough to do all these activities. But the emperor penguins, it's different. They do this at the beginning of the winter season. Okay? So here they are. They mated. The female will lay this egg. And the egg is about, I don't know, the size about 5 to 6 inches long. So it's really a substantial egg. Now they're standing on the ice. They can't put the egg down on the ice because it will freeze. So what they do is they face each other and they touch their feet together. And the female, when she deposits her egg, the eggs are, she doesn't let it touch the ground. She has a flap at the lower front of her stomach right above her legs. She deposits the eggs on there. And immediately the egg is transferred to the male. Now picture this, it's dark, right? It's freezing cold. If that egg doesn't land on the male's feet, the egg is a goner.
Right.
Because they can't pick it up. They don't have any hands. They can't pick it up with their beak because it's a big egg.
Right.
They could try maybe like a soccer player and do it with their feet. So the female transfers the egg to the male, and he has a brood flap, just like the female does, and he will immediately take the egg, put it between his legs, which are very close together, and push it up into the brood flap with his beak.
Okay.
And that, the male broods this egg for about 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now what about the female?
Now he stays put.
He stays put.
Okay.
So there are thousands of males in
just sitting there with the egg.
Yeah, but they're not sitting. They're really standing. They can't sit.
Okay.
They can't sit. They're standing. And the female, she takes off and goes 60 miles to the sea because she hasn't eaten in a while, all during this courtship and this rituals and laying the eggs.
Gestation period.
That's the word, Cal, right? She doesn't eat. So she takes off to the sea, and she doesn't come back until the chick is weaned, is hatched out.
Yeah.
So here's the males. So here they are. You talk about splitting up the responsibility.
Right.
I know women love this because the males are the caretakers of of the egg and the little chick. So what the males do is they huddle together in a crowd. They get as close to each other as they can. And all of them that have been successful have an egg to take care of. So what they do is they move in a slow shuffle. Let's say that you're a male and you're on the outside of this big crowd.
Mm-hmm.
So what they do is they make a sort of a very, very slow shuffle dance. And so you can end up in the middle of the crowd. They sort of do a circle kind of motion. It looks like a sea of slowly moving objects. And so you end up in the middle. And they continually do this, so every male has a chance to be warmed up around. And what they do when you're on the outside of this big circle, you're facing inward.
You know, it's interesting. Bees do the same thing in the winter.
Oh, that's right.
They rotate positions so that they all have a chance to warm up in the center of the colony, and then they change places with the ones from the outside who are colder.
Right. So this is their strategy for keeping the egg warm, you know, which is the most important thing they can do for preservation of their species. So as I said, there's nothing there to make a nest, and it would be too cold. So they have this strategy. They're the only penguin that does that. The other penguins make a nest out of maybe three little stones or anything they can find, seaweed or bones, because the whole object is to keep the egg off the ice.
Off the ice, yeah.
Because remember, it's always icy. There's always ice there. So, and they have to keep the egg from freezing. And if it contacts the ice, even for a short time, it's going to freeze to death. Okay, so that's what they do. And as I said, one is protecting the young, the other is out to sea. Upon its return, the adults change place. The male emperor penguin incubates the single egg for 6-8 weeks during the coldest months of the Antarctic winter. Now, when I say coldest months, it's really cold in Antarctica. Antarctica is the coldest, driest, windiest, nastiest place on Earth. And they are away from the sea. It's even colder than if along the ocean. So the male does this for 6 weeks. The female returns, okay? And from the, I mentioned that he doesn't eat all that time.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been without food for 3 to 4 months.
Hmm.
So he's lost probably half of his body weight. So now it's his turn to go and feed. So the female takes over. The chick may have come out of the egg already, emerged from the egg. So she takes over, and the male goes to the sea to feed.
He has to drag himself 60 miles to the sea
in
his malnourished state.
Yeah. Luckily, part of it is downhill.
Okay.
So he can toboggan down.
Okay.
Yes. So the female has come back, if the conditions are right, and she's loaded with food. She's probably gained 50% of her weight. And what does she feed these chicks? Okay, penguins don't have any teeth. So whatever they eat, they have to swallow whole. So here's a little chick. So what the penguin female does, and you could see this on the pictures also on our site today. I have a picture of Adelie penguins feeding their young, but all penguins do the same thing. The chick will stay snuggled right next to the mother because it still has its down fur and has to stay warm. The female will regurgitate partially digested food into the baby.
Right.
And the female will bend her head down, and the little chick always has its mouth open because they're always hungry, and the baby chick will put its beak in the mother's mouth, and the mother puts the beak
in the baby's mouth.
In the baby's mouth and regurgitate some food. And what is the food that she's regurgitating? It's krill, which are like little shrimp, and small fish, and other small critters that she can catch. But it's most of the time, it's krill. And krill is the basis of the food chain for the whole Antarctic food chain. Mm-hmm. And I'll talk about krill another time. But they are like little shrimp. And what do the krill eat? Well, the krill eat plankton. And if you remember my talk on plankton, I said that's little plants and animals that are so small they can't swim against the tide and they just drift around. So krill are these small shrimp, and that's what krill eat. They eat plankton. And an interesting thing about the eggs of the emperor penguins is that the yolks tend to be red. Now you might say, why are the yolks red? Sometimes I remember opening up an egg and there was a blood
right, yes.
thing in it, but you don't see that anymore because
right.
eggs are candled now.
More carefully. Yeah.
So why does the egg have a red tint? Because it's what the krill eat. The krill eat zooplankton that have a red substance in their food chain, and the red substance comes from like shellfish, you know, tiny little shellfish that they eat. So they eat tiny little zooplankton, and it has red in it, and I think the red is fluorine. I think it's fluorine. So it's strange. When the sailors would eat their eggs, they saw their eggs were red, but it didn't make a difference because the eggs were, you know, good protein. So that's an interesting little side fact. So here we are. We have the emperor penguins, the largest penguins on Earth, and they give birth in the middle of the winter. It sounds like suicide.
It's an amazing story.
Yeah.
Really.
Because it's dark. It's freezing cold. It's the coldest time. And when I say cold, I mean minus temperatures. It could be minus 60 degrees there. Sometimes it goes up to minus 120 on the Arctic Arctic desert land.
Wow.
And that's why it's the coldest, windiest, driest place on Earth.
That's why nothing else lives there.
Nothing else lives there. Just these emperor penguins, and the Adélie penguins spend a lot of time in Antarctica also. And I have a picture of a Adélie penguin mom feeding a chick, but they don't do it in the wintertime. Only the emperors, though. So it's a very unusual strategy, even for penguins, to do that. But as I said, they were hunted a lot in the early days because they were big. And so they had a lot of oil, and they had a lot of blubber in their bodies. And I don't have a lot of time left, but I was going to tell you a little bit more about, I told you about hunting them, right? The way they rounded them up and everything. So we won't talk anymore about the hunting because it really is not very nice to talk about.
Right.
In the old days, it was sort of accepted. I could understand if they needed meat to eat. You know, they would hunt them for food like they hunted the seals. But when they were slaughtering them by the hundreds of thousands just to get the oil, and sometimes they use their fur because the fur is a very good fur. It's feathers, but it looks like fur because the feathers are so tightly spaced together. They were making slippers out of it. So this beautiful animal ended up as slippers. It's sort of annoying. But today, the penguins are protected all over the earth. Local people still catch them for food and eggs and all that. But in Antarctica, they are protected. And you're not supposed to kill them, of course, for food. And when we went there, if you see that picture of me sitting on the ice with the penguins all around me, well, when you get off the ship, and they tell you exactly where to go. And they say, we're going to put out markers around like a trail in this area. We don't want you to go beyond that. And one of the reasons we wear those red jackets is because they want to see us.
Right.
To make sure they don't leave anybody on Antarctica when the ship leaves. So, we asked them, how close can we get to the penguins? They said, don't go closer than 15 feet to the penguins. They said, the best thing is go near the penguins and sit down, and they'll come over to you. And it was true. We had hundreds of penguins coming around us. They're very curious. They're not afraid of people, because historically they should be, because they were slaughtered, but, you know, they don't have that kind of tribal memory. And it was terrific. It's similar to the Galapagos. If you go to the Galapagos, the birds are like that in the Galapagos. They're not afraid of people, and you could walk right up to them. So it's the same in Antarctica. But they do have enemies. And one of their main animal that preys on them, or who is a major predator, is the leopard seal. Mm-hmm. And I think, Jack, did you put the picture up of the leopard seal? Yeah, that's a great photograph. I didn't take that picture. We had another photographer on the trip, and he was lucky enough to catch that. So what the leopard seals do, they have big teeth. They have canine teeth like dogs and wolves. And what they do is they swim in the water, and when the penguins approach and are getting ready to hop out of the water, the seals are waiting for them. Mm. And they grab them, and what they do, they have a great method of eating the penguins. They don't worry about skinning them or getting the feathers off. They hold the penguin in their mouth, and they shake from side to side to side, and they turn the penguin inside out.
Oh.
And then they eat the meat.
Wow.
And they discard the rest of the body, the bones, and the feathers. So we saw skeletons of penguins on the shore there. But this picture shows the leopard seal, which has a penguin in its mouth. So the other predators on penguins are, when they're babies, when they're small, the chicks and eggs, there's a bird called a skua, which is like a hawk. Looks like a seagull. Mm. They wait at the edge of the penguin colonies. And if the mom is not looking at its chick, they'll snatch the chick and fly away with it, needed. Hmm. And also, they'll steal the eggs. So the skua, this bird, is a predator. The leopard seal. And, of course, the biggest predator of all in Antarctica is the killer whale, the orca. And they patrol along just waiting for prey. But, you know, they're very well fed because they can catch anything they want.
Right.
They eat seals. They eat everything. And if you fall in the water, they would probably eat you also. But Antarctica is a beautiful place. And I say to everybody who gets a chance to go there, the chances are you won't see the emperor penguins, because most tourists don't go there in the wintertime. You'd have to be a researcher, you know, stationed there all the time, or on a special expedition. Like I said, this guy Wilson on the Scott expedition, they went specifically to get the eggs, and they almost got killed.
Wow.
They almost died of the cold and the wind, and they came back with frostbite to the rest of the party, which were waiting for the summertime to get to the South Pole. So in subsequent shows, I'll talk about that race to the South Pole and some other interesting things about Antarctica. And I'll leave you with a question. How did Antarctica get its name? And if you get the answer, you'll get a special prize next time. If you call in to the show, I'll reward you with your research. So the question is, how did Antarctica get its name? And with that, I'm going to sign off today. And thank you, folks, for tuning in. If you have any comments, we'd love to hear from you. You can do a comment right online. And Carol, I'm going to sign off today.
All right. This was really interesting.
Say goodbye to the folks. And,
fantastic.
We'll be on the air again next week with Carol Butler, who's going to do a show on our favorite topic, animal behavior. And it's going to be fascinating as usual. So see you again. Bye-bye.